This is just a quick message to say that the following podcast contains some strong language and adult humour. But with that out of the way, let's get on with the episode.
Hello and welcome to the Talking Theatre Podcast, a podcast that aims to talk all things theatre. I'm Luke.
And I'm Tom.
And each episode we get together to talk with theatre professionals, emerging theatre artists and viewers of theatre in general about their work, their earliest memory of theatre and what makes theatre so special to them more generally.
So to put it simply, we just chat about why theatre is so great with people that love theatre.
So if, like us, you're just a lover of theatre in general, this is the podcast for you. You can listen and subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. And while you're there, it would be grateful if you could drop a 5-star review and leave a comment about who you'd like to see us speak to in future episodes. And where can people go if they want to know more about us, Tom?
That's a good question. You can catch up on what we're up to on Twitter and Instagram at Talking Theatre Podcast. And similarly, if you're interested in collaborating with us at all on an episode, you can email us, to be slightly more professional, at thetalkingtheatrepodcast@gmail.com, and we'll get back to you as soon as we can.
And on this week's episode, there'll be some of this.
It's just people in the village going, well, why not? I've got nothing to do this Christmas, and deciding to put on a show.
There'll definitely be some of this.
Probably the main thing that we've learned is that if you keep fucking up, you're actually doing something right.
And even this.
It blows my mind that it's not a story that's known in the UK.
So thank you very much for tuning into this episode of the Talking Theatre Podcast. And what are we waiting for? Let's get on with the show.
Hi, mate. How are you?
Hello, Luke. I am very well. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad. Busy?
Busy, but I mean, not. It's a weird sort of busy, sort of lockdown busy, in terms of I'm still lounging around, but busy. Picked up gardening again.
That's still going strong. Oh wow, we're back.
We're back fully now. Fully in the swing.
You can tell it's spring.
Yeah, daffodils all over the place, mate. It's gorgeous. But you know, people don't want to hear about daffodils. People are here to talk about theatre, and I haven't got any theatre news.
No, neither have I. I mean, well, I'm working on a few things behind the scenes, but it's that period where, like, you're working on things, but they can't really be...
Oh, it's all hush-hush.
Yeah,
all hush-hush.
So instead of us talking about things that we can't talk about, let's actually talk to some people who can talk about things that
yes.
are coming up. So let's get on with today's episode.
On today's episode of the Talking Theatre Podcast, we aren't just joined by one guest, but two, in the form of Elizabeth Huskinson and Lewis Dragisic from Sort Solve Theatre Company.
Elizabeth is from Oxfordshire and currently in her final year of actor training at the Liverpool Institute for Performing Arts. She is the founder and artistic director of Sort Solve, a Liverpool-based theatre company who create entirely original works of theatre. She runs Sort Solve with Lewis, who is from Hemel Hempstead, and also in his final year of actor training at Lipper. Lewis is an associate artist and director of Sort Solve. Their most recent piece of work is Transmissions, written by their friend and emerging writer, Georgie Pleese. Transmissions is a series of short radio plays created in the first lockdown and performed by actors from across the UK.
They are also working on two original pieces of theatre. Firstly, Tosca, written, choreographed and directed by Elizabeth, which tells the true story of three Russian sisters who murder their father. And secondly, Nympho, written by their friend and emerging writer, Martha Markham, directed by Lewis and assistant directed and produced by Lizzie. Nympho tells the story of a young woman coming to terms with her sexual thoughts and experiences. It is dark, comical and somewhat riotous.
Elizabeth and Lewis are determined to make new work with young and emerging artists that explore untold stories and tackle challenging societal issues while focusing on the extremities of human relationships. And they're here to talk all things theatre with us today. Welcome both. How are you?
Very well, thank
Hi.
You. Hello.
How's lockdown been treating you?
Oh, I've been unusually busy, so it's kind of great and it's kind of crazy, but Lewis is in Liverpool and I'm moving back to Liverpool this week, so... It will be nice to start to come out of lockdown and see people in real life.
Well, yeah, because we're recording this sort of on the brink of things hopefully coming back to normal slightly.
Mm.
So when you get back to Liverpool, what's the sort of plan? Is there set things in concrete or back to live perform? Sorry, live rehearsals and so on?
Yeah, so we're both in a show together. We're in Revolt, she said, Revolt again. And yeah, we go into full-time rehearsals for that next Monday.
Well, hopefully it all carries on and goes ahead as planned, and that would be lovely. So before kicking off chats about what's happening now and future and so on, let's take our minds right back. And what is your, well, both of you, what is your earliest theatre memory, whether that be performing or watching or just sort of experiencing in general?
I think my first memory of seeing theatre, I don't know if it is the first time I ever saw theatre, but it was Chitty Chitty Bang Bang in the West End. And I can't remember the name of the bad guy, the kiddie catcher or whatever he was. There was a net above the theatre and he was like rolling down the nets and reaching through to me, probably a 3 or 4 year old boy. I was bloody terrified.
Oh, wow. Loved it. That sounds traumatizing.
It was great. And that kind of inspired me. And I joined a young company called Gobstoppers. And I think my first role was as the caterpillar in Alice in Wonderland. And I sang a song called A-E-I-O-U, where the lyrics were A-E-I-O and U. But I loved it. And then I had it. And then I kind of got out of it after then. I kind of stopped for many a year. But that is how I got into theatre.
My first show was Alice in Wonderland as well. I never
wow.
knew.
What?
Yeah, I was 8 years old when I did that. But my earliest, I really tried to think about this and figure out what it was. I have two and I can't tell you whether they're at the same time or years apart. But my first one is I saw a production of Red Shoes at Playbox Theatre. And I then became a member of Playbox Theatre for 11 years after that, from the age of 8. And seeing that play, I guess in a way, was like the catalyst for becoming an actor. Mm. And if I hadn't have gone to that play and seen that company, I probably would never have gone to Playbox Theatre and potentially I would never have pursued acting. So that play was like quite a big moment.
Mm.
But then I also have really early memories of seeing the like Panto in my village. And my village is really small. There's like no more than 300 people. And all the old people in the village come together and put on a Panto. I just have such early memories of Aladdin and all these like terrible, terrible actors just like giving it their all to create this show for our village and everything that could go wrong.
Like a step underneath even Amdram then, to some extent.
Oh wait, like the lowest that you could get, when we've not got to Amdram yet. It's just people in the village going, well, why not? I've got nothing to do this Christmas, and deciding to put on a show.
But we love local village communities giving it their all and trying their best.
Oh, absolutely. And they did for many years. And they roped me in eventually, and I did Alice in Wonderland for the second time in my village and promptly left and never returned.
So moving forward then, you're both going through act training at Lipper at the moment, and we've sort of discussed what's coming in the next couple of weeks, but what has it been like so far in terms of continued training over the hell that was last year?
From the start, I think it was completely life-changing before everything hit. I only decided I wanted to act when I was 17. And I was at Gobstoppers as a child and then gave it up to play rugby on Sundays instead. And then my entire life wanted to be a jazz musician. So acting was never a thing. I only wanted to do it when I joined NYT and did that 2-week course. And so the first year it was like being indoctrinated into a really lovely cult. You know what I mean? Like the loveliest cult ever. You like every week you go in and you think you're worse and worse. And then suddenly you get better and better. And then you get worse and worse. And then you get better and better. Then the pandemic hit. And it's been interesting seeing a lot of people rise to the challenge, a lot of people maybe not so much, how a way of teaching, which has kind of been the same forever, having to adapt, being over a screen. It was interesting to watch. I guess it kind of felt like being a bit of a guinea pig, but it was incredibly rewarding when it works. And then it's also incredibly disheartening when it doesn't. It also maybe doesn't help as one of those people where kind of drama training was very new to me. You know, in first year, I was doing a lot of stuff for the first time. So I still kind of had that honeymoon phase, and then it all just kind of went. So yeah, it was a weird one. It was a mixed bag, but you do what you've got to do, isn't it? You know, I think now we're kind of coming out of the end of it. It's starting it's starting to look a little bit brighter. And I'm just kind of looking forward to being in a room with people, really, because that's the heart of it. That's the heart of theatre, isn't it, really?
Absolutely.
Just being in the room with people.
Absolutely. So, jumping forward then, we want to kind of spend some time talking about Short Sound. So, let's go back to the start. First out, find out when it was founded, and why and when did you decide to start this company?
2019? End of 2018, beginning of 2019.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's it.
I don't think we have an official founded date, and we probably should have one. But we came to Lipa, and one of the things that really appealed to me about Lipa was how much it encourages you to make your own work and be really collaborative. And you kind of have the blessing of being at a school with designers, dancers, musicians, stage managers. The whole team that it would take to put on a piece of theatre are there with you. So it felt like this sort of amazing opportunity to work with all of those people. And we have been lucky to, as we've sort of start to evolve and grow. But I was just really determined to make my own work. And I think because I've been doing this for so long, and going to drama school was like 10 years coming for me. So I had kind of got some of the honeymoon phase had gone a long time ago, because I felt like I'd already gone through a lot of the ups and downs of the industry. And I really wanted to, I guess, have some power over my own career and my own work. Because I think you sometimes feel like as an actor, that gets taken away a little bit. I basically just got 8 of us in a room. I'd written like, I don't know, like a 6-page document about my vision for the piece, all these aspirations that I don't think we ever achieved. But I was like, we're gonna aim for the stars, and then, well, if we don't get there, it's fine because we've done something. And yeah, I just got like 8 actors in my year, and we sat down and I just kind of, I guess, pitched what I wanted to do. And I was really lucky that they all went, yeah, okay, let's do it. So we rehearsed for hours on end. And yeah, we made our first piece and we put it on at Lipa. And I guess even through the pandemic, in a way, we just haven't really stopped. And yeah, it just started in a random rehearsal room one day in like 2018, I think.
Yeah, I remember it now. It's in this won't mean anything to you, but in 433, you sat us around in a circle in tables. Yeah, I remember it now. It wasn't a 6-page, you had, right, this is actually what you had. You had, it wasn't 6 A4 sides, it was 6 flip chart sides.
Oh yeah.
It wasn't small pieces of paper, it was huge.
How big was the writing then, Lewis?
You know what, it wasn't that big.
There were some,
there were some pictures to fill in the gaps. It was like, it was just vomiting information on us, and we all just gladly accepted it and went along with it, and very happy we did.
I was like, we're going to go to the Edinburgh Fringe, we're going to go to London, we're going to tour the country. Not a single one of those things happened, and we just put it in a room in Lipa. But they all came on board.
I mean, not yet, but there's still time, and there's still opportunity. And hopefully when everything gets back up and running, this summer will be a glorious summer for theatre.
Definitely.
So when you went into Lipa originally then, so in terms of obviously forming this company and so on, has it always been acting, and then slow drip feeds and the other things coming in? Or has it been sort of one big suddenly, let's do this?
I mean, from my perspective, I think I always knew that I wanted to do more than act, just never really had the confidence and thought I have to train in that in the way that I'm training in acting to be justified in doing it, which part of me agrees with, because it is a real craft, and like full credit to the people who train to be directors and commit to it like actors do. But I also realized I, one, didn't have the money or time to like do an actor's degree and a director's degree. And also that like learning on the job is just as worthy as like reading books and having people telling you you're not good enough for 3 years and then like building you back up to believe that you are. That just go and do it. Just go and try it. And honestly, if it completely fails, that's fine, because a lot of what we did in that first production like really failed, and we made so many mistakes and we had so many arguments, and like things went really badly at some points. But then when we made something, I think actually we were all quite proud of it. So it didn't come out of nowhere for me. But I also think Lipa has this really subtle way of like guiding you to not be content with just being an actor.
Yeah.
So I guess jumping forward from that then, going from, as you say, the craziness of that first kind of get-together. And I think there's something really authentic about that, actually, because as long as you learn something from that process, and the fact you're able to sit here now and talk to us, I think, an extremely positive way about that experience. How did you go from that to being in lockdown and thinking, what do we do? And having this idea of going, well, let's just do some lockdown play readings then.
Oh my God, how did we get there? So something that's like, I couldn't do this without Lewis, because what happens is that I have like 1,000 ideas and only one of them is good, but I have to have Lewis there to like guide me to the one that could actually work. Mm. So I'll come out and be like, let's set up a library. Let's like go to Australia and, I don't know, found a zoo that supports animals through theatre. Like these crazy things. And Lewis will be like, which one of those is more achievable and might actually work? So he's like the wisdom in this theatre company and like the reliable element. So I think I probably just came to you with a lot of suggestions, Lewis, and probably like these play readings was one of them.
Yeah, you came with quite a few suggestions, and we split off into two, I think, really, in the sense that you went and did readings and I went and did voice classes. They were two things which are very achievable, which you can kind of attempt to do over Zoom and see if you can replicate a fraction of the real thing. And we achieved it. You know, we did the play readings, we did the voice classes. A lot of people really enjoyed the readings and said they look forward to them every week. A lot of people came to every single voice class I did. And I think also, sorry, if it didn't work, there wouldn't actually be anything wrong with that.
No.
Because when I think of everything that I've learned, especially in the training, all of those profound moments come from doing something really, really badly. And then someone that you maybe respect, or maybe some like self-analysis going, actually, that was bad, wasn't it? And you go, why? and then you find the answers yourself. So probably the main thing we've learned is that if you keep fucking up, you're actually doing something right.
I think that's the best way to look at it.
Yeah.
I think we were also quite reluctant to work online on our current productions. And I think we both just realized that was like, no one was going to enjoy that, no matter how much the industry says we're moving online and people say you've got to adapt to it and you've got to make your shows work online. I actually think it's fine to say no and just like walk away from some things. So we just haven't touched some of our productions whilst this whole thing has been happening. And I guess we're like, well, what else can we do? And how can we do things that would support people in the industry? So like everything we did was free and we welcome donations, but you could just turn up anyway. And those donations then often went to charities as well, because I think it was really important that was not the time to make money. Like that was the time just to like provide spaces for people and like just enjoy some things in life, because a lot had been taken away. But I think it would have been a mistake for us to try and push forward with our shows. And I was actually really pleased that we haven't. And even though like a year later, we've still not done anything with them, I sort of think they're better off for that in a weird sort of way.
Yeah.
And yeah, we just like, I guess, wrote off a year of making theatre and tried to make other things. Like they were made to be online. Yeah. We've not had to take a piece of theatre and force it into a digital performance, because I think we're really reluctant to do that.
I think that's a really interesting sort of stance on it, because it demonstrates a lot of thought and sort of consideration on the future and how things are working. And also, I think that is a really hopeful way to look at it, because it's sort of saying, well, we'll just wait until things are normal to do what we want to do with this, instead of trying to just go ahead with what we've got with something that doesn't work. And I think that's a really sort of intelligent, ingenious way to go about it. So it's really cool, actually. And just sort of on the back of that, in our introduction, we spoke about a couple of pieces of work that you're currently working on, obviously not during lockdown or something, but they've sort of been put on pause. And there's Tosca and Nympho. We'd love to hear more about those pieces and whether I'm saying them correctly.
And
what your sort of hopes are for when things do become accessible again and you can hopefully do them.
Mm-hmm.
So Nympho is a play written by a wonderful woman called Martha Markham. And it was originally a one-woman show surrounding a lot of events which had happened in her life, which had kind of shaped her as a character. It was almost semi-autobiographical, but then taken and fictionalized. And it was going to be an almost autobiographical show, but then we thought, no, let's kind of distance you as a person from the character. And then we started to play with it a bit more. And then I think I had the idea of, what if it's not a one-woman show? What if you play you, and then we find someone else to play every single other person that you encounter? And I got one of my very close friends and flatmates, Connor, who's just a brilliant actor and mover. So we went, Connor, you play literally everyone else in the universe.
That's a hell of a challenge.
Hell of a challenge, and he's rising to it. It's a play about many things: sex, relationships, us at our worst, us at our best, simple pleasures. There's a lot of nostalgia to the 2000s. It's a fun play. It's a fun way of tackling things which are very serious. And so I think that project really worked well with me, and we started rehearsals, and I'd say we're around a third of the way through it, maybe, before lockdown came, and we're just kind of waiting to start again, looking at venues, looking at ways we can get things going. I think a lot of different venues are starting to welcome people to book, and there's lots of grants going on, so we're just trying our best to find any way that we can put the production up.
And it really is anyway, like, as a theatre company, we really are, like, we feel like we're good at the making the work, and then we really struggle with the, like, producing and the money.
Yeah. I'm on your side with that one.
who do we talk to? And I guess we just enjoy making the work so much that everything else is secondary. And it's probably to our detriment, because people won't see the work that we're making. But I guess we just have so much less experience in almost like politics of...
I was going to say, it feels weird that when we're trained in various things at universities and drama schools, it's very rare that you're taught how to apply for an Arts Council application or venue applications and stuff like that. And it's a weird world that you say, I'll set up a company, I'll try and put on my own work. And then you get faced with that first hurdle. And it's quite daunting to go into it, but incredibly rewarding when you feel like even if you don't get a positive response from it, I sent that off, I completed that.
I managed to get through the granting system without it crashing 54 million times. Go me.
And so what about the other show that you've got, Tosca?
Yeah, Tosca. So that's been in the works. Well, do you know what? It would have gone up just like it was meant to go up the end of March 2020. So we were so close. Honestly, like 2 weeks out when we had to just call it quits and basically all escape COVID in Liverpool and all just like retreat. So it was really close, which I think was the most like heartbreaking thing about it. But yeah, Tosca is the true story of three sisters who are from Russia, who murdered their father, and they're victims of like prolonged abuse in like all the ways that abuse comes, and mainly from their father. It's like a real like conversation about being a victim and also being like a murderer at the same time. And where like morally do you sit on that line? So it's like this amalgamation of movement and text, and it's got original music in, all written and made by our friend Louis, who's training to be a musician at Lipa. And all the costumes are original and designed by our friend Neve, who's trained to be a designer at Lipa. And we've got like stage managers, producers, lighting designers, all from Lipa. So it's like this,
wow,
I don't know, like marrying of all these different crafts.
It's in one play. Yeah, that's amazing. Having such a rich base, like you're saying, that I'm very excited. I want to come see this. I'm very excited for everything.
So desperate to put it on, because it's, like, it blows my mind that it's not a story that's known in the UK. Like, it's so prolific in Russia, and because there's such a like cultural shift happening there, basically towards Orthodox Christianity and the repression of women on a like seriously huge scale, that I find it crazy that we have this like very complex political relationship with Russia within the UK. And yet when those stories come out, we're like the first within our media to suppress that story because it doesn't fit our narrative. So I like, just for the story of it, I really want people to hear it and learn about it. But it's also just really in your face, very visceral. And I think it's interesting to have like explored telling it through more of a like movement perspective, and it all being like very detailed in its choreography, rather than like writing a play about that what would turn out to basically be like Chekhov's Three Sisters.
Yeah.
And it's like the real retelling of that, but in like this really, really different way.
I'm very excited to see these when they get put up again after lockdown. I'm very excited. So what we want to sort of aim for this podcast is for a lot of people who are listening, maybe wanted to go into theatre or just the arts in general, or they've been in it and had a bit of a lull, obviously, because of 2020. Do you guys have any advice for people who are looking to dive into this world? Any advice at all?
You know, I've got a piece of advice that isn't actually my own, but Lizzie's received the same advice. We had an actor come in to our school. he was called Kyle Rowe. Brilliant, brilliant chap, and also brilliant actor. I've only seen him once, but he was brilliant and just a really stand-up, amazing guy. This is a bit convoluted, but at Lipper we have these masterclasses where loads of really famous people come in and tell you about their life and their story. We're meant to take loads from it, but you actually take nothing because you're going, I'm not going to have Rowan Atkinson's career, so why am I listening? Carl came in, just a jobbing actor who's really passionate about theatre, and the sentence I say to myself all the time, which he said, was know your shit and know your shit. In a sense that know that you are shit and there's always going to be something that you can improve, but also know your shit. And if you have both of those things, you're probably not going to fail in what you set out to do. If you have an understanding that there are limitations to what you might achieve if you don't put work into that certain thing, but also holding the confidence that there is something that you can bring to the table. Whatever training you've had, wherever you're from, there's always going to be something that you can bring to the table. Everyone has their own values, whether you might think that you're struggling in one thing, but you're going to be excelling in something else. And just from going to drama school and seeing the wide range of people that go and the differences between 30 people and how, you know, 30 people can have such different strengths and weaknesses, but they can all bring something to the table when you want to collaborate. So yeah, know your shit and know your shit.
Stand by that.
That is fantastic. I love that advice. It would catch me to myself.
Kyle's so brilliant, and like if for anyone who's looking to get involved in the industry, that he's part of a company called Just Add Milk, and what they do for this industry like astounds me every day. They're so generous with their time, and they will come and talk to us and like help us learn about this crazy industry we're getting into, but they also offer so much to just all actors and creators. Yeah, my advice would be nice and be early. Like, just, and it sounds so stupid, but be nice, you never know who you're talking to, and be early. And when I say be early, 15, 20 minutes. There on time, like if the call is 1 o'clock and you're there at 1 o'clock, you're late. And for me, like Lewis will know this, that I just won't have you in the room. I'm really, really strict on it. And I'll be like, you're late. Unless you've got a really valid excuse, obviously. Not like you're totally a reasonable person, but I just think like basic etiquette and respect for each other.
Good rules to live by. So just to end on, what socials would you like to plug if anyone wants to get in touch with you or follow what you're up to?
Sure, yeah. We have a Twitter and Instagram, both at Salt Soul Theatre. And you can check out our website as well, which is saltsoultheatre.co.uk.
Amazing.
Brilliant.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, guys. This has been a fantastic conversation, and it's been so good to hear from you. And I'm so excited to see what you guys do when lockdown's all lifted and we can go out again to the free world.
Yeah, that'd be lovely. Looking forward to seeing you guys there, and thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
So that marks the end of this episode of the Talking Theatre Podcast, and a massive thank you to both Elizabeth and Lewis for taking the time to speak with us today. I think it was so refreshing, Tom, to hear about how they took those shows March 2020 and went, we're just going to park them for now. We have no need to kind of go them on and put them online if that's not the way we want to do these pieces. And it was really refreshing and extremely brave. I just applaud that decision. I think it's fantastic.
It's really nice to sort of see patience, hope, and everything sort of come together in sort of a very calculated decision, which will 100% pay off.
It will, absolutely.
When everything opens up again very soon. I'm very excited to go see what they're doing.
So am I, yeah, absolutely. It sounds like some great pieces of work that's happening up there. So we hope that you've enjoyed this episode. And if you have, then let us know by subscribing and leaving us a 5-star review and comment on what you found interesting.
You can also stay up to date with what we're up to on Twitter and Instagram at The Talking Theatre Podcast. And as well as that, if you're interested in collaborating or just chatting with us in a more formal setting, you can email us at thetalkingtheatrepodcast@gmail.com and we will get back to you as soon as we can.
So all that's left to say is thank you for listening and we hope to see you all next week. Goodbye.
Adios.